children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good night, everyone. And I'd like to say we should have a good spitzel. And this is Rochana Bystritzky-Klatman from Mass. Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids, kids for all ages and all stages, for all mental health struggles, including addiction. And we have on tonight a very special guest, and that is Rabbi Dr. Ben-Tzion Twersky. And I am on Chol HaMoed. We do not miss a week. It is so important that we discuss this topic tonight of alcohol and Simchas Torah. So I'd like to welcome you on, Rabbi Twersky. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, it's wonderful to be here.
Good mayid. So nice to have you on again. And thank you for always being available to the Mass families and the cloud. You're always available. And anyone that wants to reach out to Rabbi Dr. Ben-Tzion Twersky, feel free to give Mass a call at 718-758-0400. So tonight, Rabbi Twersky, it is Yontif, but we don't give up. We want to get the message out there about the importance of watching the alcohol around Yontif, especially Simchat Torah. So do you want to tell our listeners why it's so important for us to make time tonight to talk about Simchas Torah and alcohol?
We've tackled this topic every year, and I have to say that I believe that there's been considerable progress in Klal Yisrael in general, but I believe that there's much more that can be done and that needs to be done. And we should put this into perspective, because you see, when somebody talks about using wine to make kiddush, I get it. You know, this is what we're supposed to be doing. When people talk about drinking on Purim, again, there's boundary issues, but I get the concept, because the Chacham said that. Nobody anywhere said that there is a reason to drink on Simchas Torah. Now, it's a yontif like any other yontif, and whatever somebody does to make kiddush, they have wine at their sudas, that's all, quote-unquote, the normal stuff. That's not problematic. And again, I need to qualify that. There are people who have a problem with alcohol, and for them it's a problem any day of the year, Simchas Torah and Purim included. But in general, the normal use of wine is to be part of our simcha. We have watched it over the years devolve. In other words, while it has developed and has changed from where it once used to be, where somebody would include wine in a suda or at a simcha, it has become something that is developed a focus all of its own, and it has taken on its own life. Let me give you an example, okay? It's not a big secret that I grew up out of town. There are still benches that, if you will find them, you will open up to Kiddush on Friday night, and you see the first paragraph of Yom HaShishi. Then, in every Zminus, every bench, it has the Bracha V'Yipi HaGofen for Kiddush. And then the last bracha of Mekadesh HaShabbos. there are zmiras that are still in the market, that next to the Bar Pi HaGofen, on the other side, they'll have the brucha of HaMoitzi. HaMoitzi Lachem Min Ha'aretz. Excuse me, by Kiddush? The answer is yes. If somebody did not have wine and was not able to make a Bar Pi HaGofen for Kiddush, they could use challah. Now, I'm an out-of-towner, and I actually remember two times, I was a really young kid, but I remember two times that we had no wine, we had no grape juice, and we had, and my father made kiddush on challah. I watched it happen twice that I can remember. The wine market has ballooned many, many times over since then. And there's probably not a grocery store anywhere where Jews live that you cannot buy kosher grape juice. And there are wine stores in every city, even if there is not a dedicated kosher wine store. There are plenty of wine stores that carry an entire line of kosher wines. The market has exploded into multiple companies in multiple countries. And we've actually developed a more finer taste for wine. There are connoisseurs. There are people who drink only red wines, people who drink only white wines, and et cetera, et cetera. Now, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a nice thing to be able to have a good quality wine, L'Kovod Yontif, L'Kovod Shabbos. But so while that, I would say, has evolved and has actually gotten into a better marketplace, it has also devolved. And now there is a focus on it. And very little of the focus is on the wines, it's more on the liquors, where there are liquors going on anytime, anywhere, at all different price ranges. And, you know, we watched this happen with a hot topic that has been addressed by everybody. We've addressed it here, it's been addressed in many places, about Kiddush clubs. And the Kiddush clubs, I mean, I don't want to take our focus off of Simchas Torah, but it has become a place where we glorify drinking liquor, but not just, you know, having a finer taste to it. We've glorified drinking to excess. We've glorified drinking to where a person can come home, and if he is still able to make Kiddush for his family and eat a Suda, it is, you know, pretty good. Because many people cannot. Many people get to that point and they cannot eat a Suda. They cannot make Kiddush again. They're gone. Well, you know what? While Kiddush clubs is something that has actually, it's a situation that has improved with a lot of intervention from Rabbonim and from our frum organizations that have denounced it. Simchas Torah is still a far cry from there. And there is very often in many places rampant use of liquor for Kiddush and drinking to excess. And for somebody who can be easily tempted, this is a severe, extreme danger. And I'd like to back up. Before we talk about the extent of the danger, I want to address the nature of it. You see, as I said earlier, if we include wine in our simchas, whether it's simchas yontif or it's a simchas celebration of a wedding, a mitzvah, I get that. I understand. But then the alcohol is serving me. I am rejoicing, and I am including alcohol in that. That's one thing. When somebody says, I cannot participate in any kind of celebration until I have alcohol in my system, then I can do it. Then we need the alcohol. We're using the alcohol. The alcohol becomes the boss. So if I on my own cannot celebrate, but if I have a couple of shots of liquor, I can. It's the liquor dancing. And that's something which is really not justifiable. Halacha does not recognize it. The Rambam and others talk about how blasphemous and how disgusting it is to daven under the influence. What kind of Avodas Hashem can we have when our our mind has been altered. That's a severe problem. Now, related to what makes this a risk and why we're talking about it, it's bad enough that it's going on among Bali Batin who are going to Shul Simchas Torah, and they're partaking. What about when you're talking about younger people? For them, they're not recognizing that they're including the alcohol to be part of their simcha. What they are doing is they're saying, "Ah, I want to get wasted. I want to get under the influence. I want to." That's not simcha's yontif, and it's problematic when we mislabel it as simcha's yontif. That's where we get into a lot of trouble. And I have to say, I've watched, while things have gotten better over the years, I'm living here in the New York area for over 30 years now. Yes, I have seen improvements, but it still goes on. And then, let me just make another side comment that it's not completely a side comment. The minig that has dominated most places that I've seen, again, not everywhere, is that after Hakafos, people begin taking out the Sefer Torah to Lane, and everybody is eilat to the Sefer Torah on the Simchas Torah. The place can talk about this minig, and it's justified and considered a positive thing to do. One should never approach the Sefer Torah if they're under the influence of alcohol. They have no business there. So what the common practice has become is that there's a location in the shul, another room upstairs, downstairs, where there's a setup to give kiddush. Very often liquors and wines are flowing. And after the person had the chance to be able to the Sefer Torah, they go upstairs and they make kiddush. Now, maybe lahalacha you're allowed to make kiddush. That may not be problematic. But once they've done that, okay, there's way too much drinking that goes on over there. But while it's not mixing in with hakafas, but it still leaves the person coming home under the influence. And we're not just talking a cup of wine. We're talking about people who are drinking much more excessively. I can't tell you a number for that, because for any two people, it's bound to be different. Some people can't tolerate a small glass of wine. Some people can be perfectly okay after several glasses. So it's hard to give a specific number. But we do have to remember is that if we're going to rejoice on Simchas Torah, we need to do this where it is us rejoicing, not the alcohol that's in our circulatory system. So that if we're using the alcohol, or including the alcohol as part of our simcha, that's one thing. If we're using alcohol in order to be the simcha, we have a big problem.
Well, thank you, Dr. Torskin. You brought up something very important about those that need a drink in order to go to a simcha. I'd like you just to explain social anxiety possibly and how the alcohol takes effect in a way that they feel more comfortable.
You know what? When in the medical field, once upon a time, when they were developing the concept of doing surgery, this is a big problem. You're cutting people's body with a knife. That's going to be very painful. How are they going to bear it? So they began to look at methods of anesthesia, remove the ability to feel. And the first anesthetic in the marketplace was alcohol. So they would take a patient who needs whatever surgery it is, give him enough alcohol to make him drunk as a skunk. He passes out. He's completely anesthetized. Do your surgery. Difficulty was that sometimes people would, the alcohol would wear off. It would stop having the amount of anesthesia that was needed, and they would start waking up, and they're still too too drunk to be able to drink more because they just can't do the act. And so they have to come up with a way of introducing alcohol into the system. They developed ether. Ether is actually a gaseous form of alcohol. So this way, as long as the person's breathing, they have that mask over the person's face. They're inhaling the ether, and you're able to get the blood alcohol levels to where you need them for anesthesia. Alcohol is an anesthetic. It is not a stimulant. Just because people dance or maybe jumping around and active when they're drunk, that's not because it's a stimulant. It doesn't put people to sleep. It gives a very distorted sleep pattern. You're not refreshed after an alcohol-induced sleep. Alcohol is an anesthetic. And we have no business numbing our feelings. There are uncomfortable feelings, and we have to deal with them. And there's therapists galore out there doing that, from psychologists to social workers to mental health counselors, even coaches in certain cases. You've got plenty of people doing the therapy and the kind of emotional work that's needed so that we can be comfortable with our own feelings. Trying to just numb them, you're not taking you're taking yourself away from the pain, not the pain away from you. And that's something that we need to recognize, that it's a dumb use of anesthesia to go to a shul and to get bombed just in order to continue doing whatever it is you otherwise have to do. Our culture is a feel good culture. This is the world that we live in. We look for things to give us pleasure, excitement, thrills. We look for ways to get away from pain, inconvenience, sadness, and all the other negative feelings. So there's nothing, following that way of thinking, using a chemical to change the way that you feel emotionally makes perfect sense. It just doesn't work. And it winds up causing far more destruction and far more damage. So that what we need to do is recognize using alcohol for emotional reasons is problematic. That's not what alcohol is for. And for that, there's plenty else that needs to be done. Nobody said the feelings are pleasant feelings. We're not telling you to feel good about it. We're telling you that you have to deal with it differently. Don't just anesthetize it. And the best reasons of all is that if you anesthetize emotion, what do you do when the anesthesia wears off? You're right back to where you came from, possibly plus. So it's neither an effective way to deal with it, and in all odds, it's a very negative way to deal with it. Shul is, for many people, it's a place they love to be. Right? I'll speak for myself. I enjoy going to shul. I like davening. I like participating in spiritual things. It's a turn-on for me. It wasn't always like that, but Baruch Hashem, I've worked on myself so that it's become a positive place for me. There are people for whom being in shul is not a positive place, and for a variety of different reasons. There are people who, when they were younger, found shul to be uncomfortable because they were embarrassed, because somebody chepped with them and mistreated them. There were people who have been embarrassed in shul for various reasons. Whatever the dynamics are, if they're associating shul as being a negative place, again, I follow the logic. I want to get rid of that feeling. But the way to get rid of the feeling is to address it from a therapy angle, where you're able to process the feelings and able to overcome them and to reframe them. To take them and to just put them under anesthesia is not an appropriate thing to do. Anesthesia is appropriate to engage in a procedure that's going to make something better. You need to pull out a bad tooth. You need to undergo surgery. It's an appropriate thing to do because it's being used for a specific event. But to do the normal things that a person needs to do, to go to shul, to participate, to daven, if it's Simchas Torah, to dance and to participate in it. All that's beautiful, but not with alcohol. If you need to feel good about being there, you have work to do. And alcohol is not the answer.
Thank you. Dr. Tversky, let's talk about peer pressure. People are going to shul, people are offering, you know, someone, their friends to drink. How does one deal with that feeling of peer pressure?
No, it's a loaded question, because we've used alcohol over the years increasingly as a social lubricant. And you know what? Somebody wants to be together with somebody else. Hey, you know, in the Gaiusha world, let's do it over a beer. Let's do it over a martini. Let's do it over whatever. Something is going to change the way that we feel. And probably should say this, but it's much more common that people are using other chemicals to accomplish this. You don't get alcohol on your breath from having marijuana, gummies, edibles. These things get the person calm, and there's no liquor on their breath. We've used it socially. And again, it's one thing if it's creating the ease of being able to interact with people, that's problematic. If we are including alcohol, again, in moderation, obviously, but if we're including it in our social connection, that's one thing. You know, if we're including it in our simcha, that's one thing. But if we're using this as a catalyst to be able to socialize, that becomes a really serious issue. A is it doesn't help. B is it causes negative consequences. We were going to find alcohol being used as the arena where people are going to be going to look to interact socially, and that's where the peer pressure falls into place, and it's really a negative thing. We need to be able to say no, and I know that sounds overly simple.
Well, no is a full sentence.
It's correct. It's a full sentence, but there are plenty of full sentences. Like somebody can say, oh, I'm on medication. My doctor told me I can't. That's a good excuse. It's going to get, it may get you off the hook, right? But tomorrow or a week later or a month later, oh, you're still on medication? Give me a break. Come on. Right? So it's an excuse that may get you over once for a very limited time. After that, these kind of excuses and explanations don't work. For somebody who wants to push, they will push. When you just say, no, I don't drink, or I won't drink, they get the message. Now, they may try to push, but don't give them excuses for answers. Just say no. And it's a full sentence and it's very simple, it's a very direct message that has no wiggle room to it.
Dr. Tversky, maybe somebody that feels that they're going to be pressured should get some grape juice and walk around with a cup of grape juice in their hand. Nobody will know what it is.
I got to tell you that I watched my father-in-law many years ago at a kiddush. He did not drink anything. He disliked it. So whatever liquors they were in the house, they came on Purim and they went the next year Purim. You know, they came with Mishlach Manos, they went out that way. There was no drinking in my father-in-law's home. And when there was a kiddush in shul, he would go for a shot glass and he would pour ginger ale in it.
Right.
And he would walk around and he would say l'chaim to everybody. And if there was a simcha, he would give his mazel tovs and, you know, whatever his best wishes were. And he pulled it off. You know, I had an experience by a relative, that there was a simcha, and I knew somebody from the other side of the family who enjoyed drinking. It actually showed up there with alcohol in his breath. And as soon as there was access to the table with the liquor, he grabbed shot glasses and shoved one in everybody's hand, including mine. And this was in somebody's dining room, so there wasn't room to run around, to be able to go anywhere. And he grabbed the bottle of whatever it was. I don't know what kind of liquor it was. And I personally don't know the difference between them. And he's pouring for everybody, and I snuck out from the living room, and I ran into the kitchen with the shot glass, and I filled it up halfway with water.
Right.
And I came back into the room. There had been a bottle of vodka on the table. I didn't open the bottle, and I made believe that I was pouring it in. And I came back, and I drank it, and I said, L'chaim. And he was so thrilled. But we got in the car to go home. I turned to my wife, and I said, you know what? Thank God for vodka. She says, since when did you ever say something like that? I said, it got me off the hook. He thought that I drank vodka.
Right.
He was so happy.
Elder with water, with grape juice, anything. And have a strong no. Don't forget, no is a full sentence. And just have a cup in your hand with some water, seltzer, whatever. Say L'chaim, and you don't have to give in to peer pressure. Dr. Rabbi, we are coming to a close. I just want you in 1 minute, tell us what to do if somebody sees someone passed out after drinking, please.
So we are apt to want to dismiss a situation like that, that the person passed out, they're going to sleep it off and everything's going to be fine. And you know what? Probably statistically, you've bet the odds properly. But I wouldn't do that because you have no idea whether or not this person has drunk to the point of alcohol poisoning. You have no idea whether or not there's anything else that's going on. The person may have fallen and may have been injured, and the injury is where you're not seeing it. I would go for help immediately. Whatever your first responder is, if Hatzalah is available, reach out. I know that in the New York area, it's commonplace that there is a red Hatzalah phone in the shul. Whether it's in the shul itself or in the room next to the shul, somewhere around. And it's a phone that if you lift the receiver within X number of seconds, it connects to Hatzalah automatically and make your report. Don't start to calculate, well, it's Shabbos, it's Yontif, it's called Shabbos, if you really don't need it. No. With medical stuff, there is no Chil Yontif, there is no Chil Shabbos. You have to take care if there's even a minimal chance that you're dealing with a situation of danger. Alcohol poisoning is very often fatal if it's not caught in time. Many of these things, you don't know if it's an injury. If it's an injury, you have no way to evaluate if it's a serious one or it isn't. I've seen people fall, they hit their head. Again, it may not be terribly serious, but it might be. You reach out and do whatever you can to get the necessary medical help. If it's Hatzalah, if it's 911, whatever it is, wherever you happen to be, know who the first responders are, which we need to do regardless, and reach out.
Well, thank you very, very much for coming on during Yontif. I want to just give a shout out to all the Hatzalah members. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I want to wish everyone a very good Yontif, a good Kfitzel. And always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually still, hug tight. Tonight's show is in memory of Rivka Bas Yisrael. Please go online to maskparents.org and donate so that we could continue with all the mask programs. Thank you, Rabbi Dr.
Great Yontif.
good night.